This is Chef John Foles welcoming you to Stirring It Up, the best tasting show on radio, and inviting you to join us at the kitchen table for another hour of adventures in food. Each week we travel from the back roads of Louisiana to the streets of Europe's capitals, delving into food. We talk with chefs, food historians, authors, and producers. We search out current trends, revive forgotten traditions, and naturally, we're going to cook for you. Have you ever been told you should market that recipe? Learn what's involved in taking a unique homemade sauce or condiment from kitchen to grocery store shelves. Join me, Chef John Foles, and Gay Sandoz, director of the LSU Ag Center's Food Incubator, as we talk about Louisiana culinary entrepreneurs on Stirring It Up next. But first, the news.
From NPR News in Washington, I'm Janine Herbst. Federal officials say a man from Illinois has been infected with the virus that causes MERS, Middle East Respiratory Syndrome. The Centers for Disease Control says it's the first time the infection has been transmitted in this country. Dr. David Swerdlow with the CDC says the man is doing okay.
At this time, he is reported to have had mild cold-like symptoms, but he did not seek or require medical care since exposure to the Indiana MERS patient. He is currently reported to be feeling well.
The CDC says the first case of MERS in this country was confirmed earlier this month in Indiana, where a man fell ill shortly after coming to the U.S. from Saudi Arabia. In Laos, at least five people are dead after a military plane reportedly crashed into a wooded area on approach to the airport. Media reports say among the dead are the country's defense minister and other high-ranking members of Laos' ruling party. Officials think 18 people were on board that plane. A blanket of fog hangs over San Diego today, and it's helping fire crews snuff out the six wildfires still burning there. From member station KPBS, Megan Burks reports.
Two fires are nearing full containment. Crews are beginning to gain the upper hand on three separate fires on the Camp Pendleton Marine Corps base. And 20 miles away in San Marcos, crews have reached 70% containment on the Cocos fire. Many residents are returning home, but some evacuation orders are still in place. Fueled by unseasonably high temperatures and winds, more than 10 wildfires tore through at least 25,000 acres this week. Early estimates from the county show at least 48 structures destroyed, including dozens of houses and an 18-unit apartment building. For NPR News, I'm Megan Burks in San Diego.
60 years ago today, the U.S. Supreme Court's ruling in Brown versus the Board of Education of Topeka struck down the separate but equal standard in public education. But as NPR's Claudio Sanchez reports, schools filled with students of a single race are still common, and efforts to integrate them have been mixed.
Every state except Hawaii and Nevada today is under federal desegregation orders covering nearly 8 million kids. And yet, most white children, 84%, still attend schools where they are the majority. Most black and Latino students also attend so-called majority-minority schools, where they're less likely to get the resources that majority white schools receive, top-notch teachers and a rich curriculum. Researchers say this is due largely to residential segregation. Across the country, most kids are assigned to schools in or near their neighborhoods, neighborhoods that are not very diverse. And unless that changes, civil rights activists argue, segregated schools will persist. Claudia Sanchez, NPR News.
Horse racing's second leg of the Triple Crown gets underway tonight. The Preakness at Pimlico in Baltimore starts in about 15 minutes. The favorite is California Chrome, the three-year-old colt who won the Kentucky Derby. This is NPR. An ongoing bitter battle over smartphone technology patents between two of the world's biggest tech companies appears to be ending. Apple and Google have reached an agreement settling all of the lawsuits against each other. The agreement means nearly two dozen lawsuits in the U.S. and European courts are over. The dispute centered on the phone's operating systems, but the deal has no impact on a separate patent issue, Apple's lawsuits against Samsung, also over smartphone technology. One day after winning an outright majority in the Indian election to select a lower house of parliament, BJP leader Narendra Modi traveled to New Delhi to lay the groundwork for his ascension to power. Prime Minister Singh tendered his resignation today and will act as a caretaker over the next few days. NPR's Julie McCarthy reports from New Delhi on what some supporters of Modi are looking for in their new prime minister.
The young who voted for Modi said they voted for aspiration, an aspirational India. An India of equality, an India where caste does not matter. But caste or class notwithstanding, fixing the economy, putting India back on the road to recovery is an enormous task that awaits Narendra Modi, who is soon to become India's next prime minister. Julie McCarthy, NPR News, at the BJP headquarters in New Delhi.
129 decorated baseballs by celebrated sports artist Leroy Neiman sold at auction in New York today for $500,000. They were made more than 30 years ago, mostly in colored magic marker, capturing some of baseball's greatest players. Heritage Auction says the top-selling ball depicted Marilyn Monroe and was signed by her second husband, Joe DiMaggio. I'm Janine Herbst, NPR News in Washington.
Support for NPR comes from the Robert Wood Johnson Foundation, working to build a culture of health for all Americans, on the web at rwjf.org.
You're listening to KRVS 88.7 FM, Lafayette, Lake Charles, a public service of the University of Louisiana at Lafayette. Find us on Facebook at KRVS Public Media.
Y'all, Chef John Falls welcoming you to Stirring It Up, the best tasting show on radio. From the swamps and bayous of South Louisiana, thanks for joining us in our little piece of culinary heaven where good cooking is just a way of life. Mornings begin here with a roux simmering in a cast iron pot, and our evenings end with thoughts of what we're going to cook tomorrow. All right, everybody, welcome to Stirring It Up, and thank you so much for being with us at the kitchen table today. I tell you what, it's a full house, too. The pots are boiling on Big Blue. See my stove right there, Michelle? You smell what's going on it, huh?
What is that?
What? It's a...
What am I smelling?
It's air pudding. It's air pudding, as Mary used to say. Slama, we had a wonderful lady who raised all of us, Mary Fasher, you know. And we'd run in the house when we were about 8 or 9 years old, and we'd say, Mary, what do you have for us for dessert or for food today? She'd say, air pudding. Go outside, open your mouth, and suck it in until I got my... Anyway, y'all, it's great to have you all with us today, and I want to begin by introducing and welcoming our executive producer, Michelle Yark. How are you doing?
I'm doing great, thank you.
Anyway, and across the glass wall, our engineer keeping us alive and well on the satellite up there, Dean Slama. What's going on?
Not too much.
Remember when the lieutenant governor, when we did our opening of the plant, and he said something. Remember what he said? Audacity,
yeah.
Audacity. Remember that?
I do.
He said John Falls reminded him of Patton. Audacity. Toujours audacity. Everyday audacity. Wasn't that wonderful? Greatest compliment of man.
That's not too bad.
No, be compared to Patton. Audacity. Huh? Adas, toujours adas.
Toujours.
Michelle, another beautiful day, huh?
It is. I'm thinking about maybe doing a little gardening. Is it too late to plant a garden?
Of course it is. For you, it is.
Well, herbs?
But just think of the gift you'll give the seeds by not tartaring
them.
Yeah,
you're probably right.
In your garden, huh?
You know, I missed the plant sale at Burden. A couple weeks ago.
Lucky for them.
You remember Rita?
Sure. Rita Solomon. Yeah, she's still doing it?
Oh, yeah. She was there. She was selling her herbs and olive trees. I wasn't there, but I heard. Great turnout. Lots of beautiful, locally grown plants for purchase. I'll have to mark my calendar for next year.
Of course you will. And the Burden Center, I mean, we do a lot of events over there, and I love it. I love it so much. There's so much to learn about all things Louisiana as part of the LSU Ag Center. They support the state's nursery, landscape, and fruit and vegetable industries. They also do important work with our wetlands, our coastal restoration, our forestry industry. All besides just being a lovely place to visit. I mean, I really do love them, and I think we as a state are fortunate to have the LSU Ag Center.
Absolutely, and the Ag Center itself is so diverse. I mean, it's so much more than just a resource for answering questions about growing citrus or figs. I mean, I could keep them on the line all season with my questions. But they're more than that, and they're more than just producing new species of plants that can survive and thrive in our climate, though that's important. I mean, those are definitely important things that they do for us. They're particularly focused on developing new technology to help Louisiana producers provide food, fiber, and fuel, not only locally, but to the rest of the nation. I mean, look at Audubon Sugar Institute. They're working on biofuels. The Department of Agricultural Chemistry is researching ways to improve feed, to improve pesticides and fertilizers, all for our animals and for our crops. It's a great center.
Well, you know, and they have great resources in people there as well, that people mm-hmm. resource that the public can access at any time. Remember our Sweet Potato Show with Mavis Finger?
Yeah.
She was a fabulous guest, and I said at that time, not only was she a bright young scientist, I'm going to call her, a terrific asset to the Ag Center, and she was working on sweet potato, and you watch, she is going to be one who's going to create something better than the Beauregard. I didn't think we could ever have a better root vegetable than the Beauregard, and then she told me about Evangeline. She said, oh, no. Have you tasted Evangeline? I said, no, I hadn't tasted Evangeline sweet potato. She said, well, you watch. But she's going to be one. I just loved her excitement about that. Mm-hmm. And I guess she represents well what goes on at the Ag Center. And the Ag Center promotes interest in Louisiana's natural resources for our youth mm-hmm. as well. They support the 4-H program. During the summer, students attend camps, the Youth Wetlands Education and Outreach Program, to provide wetlands-related hands-on learning activities that's training our future leaders in Save America's wetland resource. They're a great treasure for us.
Well, they are.
No doubt about it.
And you know, there's a relatively new addition to the Ag Center that's really exciting. It's the Ag Center Food Incubator. It's only been in operation for not quite a year, but since it's starting, they've assisted many culinary entrepreneurs to reach the local market. I mean, they've gotten products into Whole Foods and Alexander's Highland Market, Calandro's.
Well, they've been getting a lot of publicity, too.
And yes, they have.
There's a need because everybody in Louisiana loves to cook.
Everybody.
And we think we have a great product for the market.
And everybody has a great hot sauce. And everybody has a great barbecue sauce. And a great dressing. But their role
is... They do.
Absolutely. And the role of the incubator is to help the little guys survive the startup, because that phase is really difficult. They provide business support, services. They provide education and resources. They kind of guide these entrepreneurs from concept to final product. An invaluable resource, really.
Well, I mean, you're talking my language as well. I'm always thrilled to see someone take a unique recipe, whether it's a family recipe or something they found at the hunting camp that everybody raves about, and they want to take it to market. And whether it's a hot sauce, as you mentioned, or a pepper jelly, or maybe they have the best chicken and sausage gumbo in their neighborhood that everybody always asks for. There's going to be a market constantly developing for exceptional taste, good quality, uniqueness, and regionality. And we're all about good food here, and every true foodie has their own idea about what ingredients makes the absolute best seasoning mix or the best sauce or the best soup. Our local products are everywhere, roadside stands, corner markets, and as you mentioned, even Whole Foods. But you know, it's one thing to have a sauce, or maybe a great dressing, or a condiment recipe, or that gumbo, but to be able to produce it in quantity and keep the integrity and the flavor the way it was meant to be, the texture, the ingredients that continue to have great particulate matter, as we call it, extend the shelf life of it, whether it's going to be frozen, whether it's going to be fresh, is it shelf stable? Well, that's a very complicated procedure, and it requires not only a great cooking skill, but it requires science and the ability to make it happen.
And that's where the Ag Center comes in. Their team works with the entrepreneur. They call the entrepreneurs their tenants, and they train them on commercial equipment that meet all the strict federal standards. So they help smooth that transition from small kitchen to the larger processing equipment. I mean, imagine how frightening that must be. You're standing at your stove, your GE, and then the next thing you know, you're looking at one of the commercial operations like the manufacturing plant in Donaldsonville.
Well, no, absolutely. And I started out the same exact way. When I was called upon to do a gumbo for Casino Magic, I was a restaurant chef. And of course, my volume went from a little pot to maybe 5 gallons at that time. But then to be called by a casino on the Biloxi coast and to tell me, oh, we definitely need help with gumbo, it's not working out for us. And I said, well, how much do you need? They said, well, we're going through about 600 gallons a week. I said, what? And we need help. Can you do it for us? And I So, I mean, I know what these young entrepreneurs are going, these visionaries who want to take that great sauce to the market. I mean, think of my plant in Donaldsonville. Sure, I knew how to make a gumbo. I even knew how to make 5 gallons of gumbo. But to do what we do today for entrepreneurs, we need vats that hold thousands and thousands of pounds. I mean, my kettles cook 2 tons of a gumbo at one time, 2 tons of a soup at one time.
But it didn't start that way.
No, of course.
Which is such a remarkable story. I mean, because right there in the lobby is the little kettle that you began in, which is what, 5 gallons?
Five-gallon
kettle.
That's right.
And I mean, that's a great story because you really had to get in there and do it and just think you had some advantages because at least you were already in the restaurant industry.
Well, no, I knew how to make 5 gallons, and because of that, I thought of myself as a professional, and I wasn't afraid of the next step, but the next step took me from 5 gallons to doing 100 million pounds of food a year that we ship all over the globe, and yes, it started out 1 cup of onions, 1 cup of celery at a time. Now when I dump onions, it's 1,000 pounds at a time going into a kettle. But you know what? I came to learn that it's all the same thing. The only thing that changes is the numbers.
I think I see a speaking engagement for you in the future of at the Ag Center and talking to some of these young entrepreneurs. I mean, you have a great story of how you grew up in it.
Well, you know, it's a story of possibilities. I mean, people need to see the possibilities. There's nothing more wasted than talent because they don't have the will to take it to the next level. I mean, that's really always shocking to me that somebody, how many great opportunities are lost because people are afraid to take the next step because the fear of failure or the fear. And that's one thing, as you well know, I've never had.
No, absolutely not.
But it's true. I never had a fear of failure because I grew up in an environment where you had to make things happen and you had to make them happen for yourself with a lot of support around you, of encouragement mainly. And that's what the show is about today, y'all, about encouragement. And if you think you have a great sauce, if you think you have a great gumbo, if you think you have a good spread or a salad dressing or a hot sauce, you know what? The world has proven time and time again that there's always need for one more. But that one more has to be exceptional, has to be different, has to be exciting, and you have to be able to tell your story. Ruth Fertel, the founder of Ruth's Chris Steakhouse, said it best. Here was a woman who was a waitress at a table in Chris's steakhouse. And she had a dream when Chris decided that he was going to close the restaurant, shut it down, and all the waitresses had to go find a new job. Ruth said, "Sell it to me." And he said, "What do you know about running a business?" And she said it best. She says, "It's not about the steak. It's about the sizzle." If you can tell the story and you can tell somebody why your product is best, then you know what? At the end of the day, certainly the product has to compete. Certainly the steak has to be good. But it's the stories we tell that excite the public to come to our table, or the stories we tell about why our sauce or our hot sauce should be chosen on the shelf rather than the guy next to him. That's what turns this dream into entrepreneurship. And that's what we're going to be talking about today, y'all. So you don't want to miss any of this. We're going to be talking to our guests at the Ag Center. And Michelle, Alex is here.
I know.
Alex is here.
Alex McLaren.
Alex McLaren is here. And Alex, how are you doing?
Good. How are you?
And we're going to be talking about him because you know what? He's one of my proteges. He just doesn't know it yet.
I think he knows it.
He's one of my proteges. Not only are we going to hunt wild boar together, we're going to cook a whole boar. And he might actually be in my culinary school with a John Paul scholarship. He looks like a perfect chef to take under my wing, huh?
Well, thank you.
Look, my wing is spreading out toward you, Alex. You just got to jump under it. You know what I mean, huh? Jump on. Y'all, we're going to be back in a minute. Don't miss these opportunities you're about to hear.
KRVS underwriting announcements reach listeners with your message of support and information about your business or event. To find out more about partnering with South Louisiana's Regional Public Radio Program Source, call us at 482-5787. 482-KRVS.
Rural and urban landscapes often have their history, their character, their pride, and their identity all channeled through a river. On the Thistle and Shamrock, hear the flow of music from the riverbanks as traditional and contemporary song celebrates rivers as sources of life and timeless inspiration.
Coming up Sunday evening at 6, right here on KRVS.
You don't need a stamp to enter the world of jazz. I'm DeJama Gagne, the host of Passport to Modern Jazz. Tuesdays at 10 p.m., I'm going to walk you through the gate and into the world of current jazz, back to New Orleans jazz earliest recordings, and won't leave out the Hammond B3.
When the rooster crows in the morning, I make my coffee strong and hot. Pile a skillet high with potatoes, ham, and eggs. I used to work on the 33rd floor, hoping that some money coming through be long. But life is good since I moved back to the farm. Yeah, life is good since I moved back to the farm. Sun climbs high in the big blue sky and sets the back hills on the glow. And the factor.
Life is good since I moved back to the farm. Welcome back, everybody, to Start It Up, the best tasting food and culture show on radio. It's so nice to have all of you with us today. And I have with me in the studio a special guest, Michelle.
I know.
I
know.
Alex McLaren, and he's going to ninth grade, right, Alex?
Yes, sir.
Ninth grade, huh? Just got back from a big boar hunt?
Yes, sir, last night.
So you got in at what time?
1:30.
You exhausted right now?
A little bit.
Are you excited? Yeah, but you're probably so excited about being here with me, right, huh?
Yeah.
I can tell. You see,
Alex and I are both excited to be here with you.
See that? Yeah, but I mean, Alex.
I'm excited, too.
Are you excited? We're all excited.
Well, Alex is the only one not being paid to be here. That's all I can say, huh, Alex? So you're the only one I'm going to focus on right now. So now, tell us a little bit about yourself. What school are you going to? Because you're moving on now to junior high, right?
Yes, sir. I'm going to Fountain Blue High School.
And now tell us about your mom, because your mom's a very special lady, too, right?
Well, she works for you.
Yeah, but that's not why you're here. But, I mean, she does work for me, but, I mean, she's a special girl.
Hmm? Okay. She gave us her big room, and we call it the man cave.
All right. You see that, huh? We had a man cave at Miles, too, but Daddy put a big stone in the front of the door and locked us in there. You see? Not the difference. But, I mean, that was a long time ago when you could abuse kids. It wasn't like today, you know what I mean?
Different times.
But anyway, Alex, now tell me about the project you're working on.
Well, I'm supposed to be doing a project on some Louisiana history figure.
Uh-huh.
And I can either do food or a person.
Right.
And so I decided to combine those two and choose you.
Wow, that's fantastic. Now, there was a lot of great people to choose, food and a person. Can I say that you chose me because of my fame and the quality of the interview you were going to do, or you couldn't get in touch with John Besh? I mean, I'm just asking. Huh?
I never considered him.
You see that, Michelle? That's a
you
man.
See?
That man's going to be successful. He came to the top right away.
Now, though we love John Besh.
Of course we love John. John Besh would be laughing right now.
Yes, he would.
Because he'd say the same thing about me. So tell us about the project. Now, what really do you have to do in the project?
I have to write a paper on you, and then for my final exam grade, I have to portray you being a wax person and got to tell anybody who walks up about you.
So somebody has to walk up and look at the wax figure you're going to do and recognize that as me.
I got to act like you.
Wait a minute. I don't know if this was the best choice.
No, that's why he's here. So you can look at my mannerisms and he can see, you know, how I cut up and talk to people. That way you can mimic it, right? And
that's we're right. Both, so we're you need both, to be on your best behavior.
And we're both hunters. I mean, I did my turkey hunt. He did wild boar. I mean, we already have a lot in common. He's got my chef jacket on. Look at that. With the John Falls logo. And he looks
very nice.
He looks the part exactly. Huh?
Yes, he just needs his hat.
Slama, we need
and
to make sure
coming.
We got a picture of him on the website so everybody can look at it.
Sure.
I mean, we need to start this thing off right.
I think we got a celebrity in the make.
Alex, I don't know if you know this or not, but I have a lot of likes. You know, people that really like wanting to friend me, so you're going to be on
that. That sounds good.
Yeah, that's good. See, well, Michelle, we're on the right track.
Y'all partners.
Yeah, absolutely. Any question to me before we start the big interview? One question you want to ask me so I can answer it for? Just one?
Not that I can think of.
Oh, so your mom's already loaded you up with it. I see. So you got an inside job here. Anyway, I wish you a great young man, and I tell you, good-looking young man, too. I tell you what, I can't wait to see this man's future. You know, you can always tell when that acorn's going to grow into an oak.
Well, he has a great mom.
He's got a great mom, that's right. And, of course, not only a great mom, now you've got a great mentor here to walk that walk with you, Alex. If you want to do food somewhere along the way, I'm going to be right there with you. Michelle, and now that everybody knows, I'm only going to see his picture,
mm-hmm.
and he's just kind of studying us and see what we're going to do. He's going to help me with the recipe in a little while if we get to it. So why don't you introduce our guest who's been waiting patiently.
I would love to. Our guest is Gay Sandaz, director of the LSU Ag Center Food Incubator. She discovered her life's passion when she was a young girl. She grew up in Opelousas.
That's all you need to say right there.
I know. Great cook right there.
Tar Gills, the store across the street, right?
This is what I love about Gay. When she was 7 years old, she was what you would call one of those fortunate children because she had an easy bake oven.
Oh, I guess so.
I know.
We had an easy bake, too. Just throw wood in it.
Well, she was creating her own mixes for her little easy bake oven, but coming from a great family of cooks, it was probably just second nature to her. Now, knowing that she wanted to be in the food business, she studied dietetics at Southeastern. She went on to graduate studies at LSU, and now she is the director of the incubator that we've been talking about. She was at the Norco Food Incubator Facility, which is a similar food venture institution. She was recruited by LSU, and now she's heading up that program. It was an opportunity she couldn't turn down, and since then, she and her team have assisted clients to get products to market, and they have a long waiting list for potential tenants who want to get into the program. In her spare time while helping others in their food ventures, Gay authored a cookie and dessert cookbook. She's had great success with that. She has her product on QVC, and her motto is, it's easy to get your product on the shelf. The hardest part is getting it off the shelf. And I don't think truer words have ever been said. She's here to tell us how. And Gay, we are so delighted to have you with us on Stirring It Up today.
Well, thank you so much. I admire both of you guys, and Don Fultz has done an awesome job with promoting Louisiana and products. So the Ag Center Food Incubator is something that it should have been built a long time ago, just to say that, and John knows that as well, because we try to be a resource center for people, for food businesses.
Well, Gay, I mean, what a great need, and certainly a great challenge for entrepreneurs, food entrepreneurs, is to try to get that product in the marketplace. And, of course, not only the work you did in Norco, but then moving over to the LSU Ag Center Food Incubator, I'm sure it's been a great walk for you. Let's start off with your QVC success, because ooh, that's an example of kind of moving a product from conceptualization to realization, and then of course even getting on QVC with a product doesn't mean that you're going to have any success. I mean, we've done a lot of work with QVC and promoting products, and the public is very fickle out there, aren't they?
It's tough. Yeah, you really have to study QVC, and you have to study their market demographics and make sure your product fits that market, because if it is hard, and it's hard to get on, and it's hard to stay on and be substantial business on QVC. But I was fortunate. I had this great product, and it's done very well. We've sold 60,000 of them since January. I know.
Gosh.
By June, if we sell all the POs that we have, the purchase orders, we'll have sold 100,000 of this chicken roasters. It actually barbecues the chicken in the microwave, and many other recipes come with it. So that, I've been very blessed with that. That was really, it's fun, too. I mean, it is fun to get on QVC and see those sales.
No, sure.
Well, you're a great example for the tenants that you work with with the food incubator. Oh, my gosh.
You can make your dreams come true if you really, you know, don't look at things as failures. You look at, you know, just as learning experiences and move on and try something else.
Now you are this is fairly new, I guess, for building entrepreneurs, and because in Louisiana we're unique here, and I would say unique in the 50 states, in that just about everybody here cooks. Just about everybody comes from family of good cooks. We have the greatest pantry of raw ingredients anyone could ever imagine. So everybody thinks certainly that their family recipe is there, their own barbecue sauces, their camp cooking successes are ready for the world. So tell us a little bit about the food incubator and what's it about, why the inception of it, and where has it grown to?
And I'll tell you that I have more calls every day, at least 10 calls from entrepreneurs or people with recipes that want to put them out on the market. And you know, it takes more than just a great recipe. It is a business, so they have to learn how to do business. Their finances are so important, and that's where they usually are lacking in experience. So it's great to have a great recipe, but you know as well as I do that, you know, you have to get it into people's mouths. You have to get people to become customers. The food incubator started, Charlie D'Agostino runs the business incubator. And so he was very instrumental in getting this incubator on campus, the food incubator. He worked with the chancellor, and the chancellor, is the vice president now, Dr. Richardson. And Dr. Richardson was the one that really hired me over to come and create this incubator. I have known it's been needed since I was with Cajun Injectors. So, because looking for resources as an entrepreneur or a food company is just difficult. You know that. I mean, you go here for bottles, you go here for labels, you don't really know where to go. So when an entrepreneur comes to the incubator, we start off with the recipe, and I have a full-time food scientist, which makes us unique to other incubators. He works with the tenants and gets their products ready for the shelf. I work with them on marketing and labeling and that sort of thing and business development. But like I said, get it on the shelf is easy to go into a store and sell your product. You have to get the customers to buy it. So we teach them how to do that as well.
Well, and you mentioned finances yes. a minute ago. And of course, everything is driven by cost and by a cost of doing business. And nothing is more costly than first of all, the R&D process, but secondly, packaging and then distribution and all the things that very few people even hear about prior to going into, say, an incubator to start to talk about my great product that I have. So where do you begin? Tell me about the beginning of the process.
Well, we give presentations quarterly. They come to the presentation and we tell them the bad and the good about getting into this business. You know, we tell them what it costs and what is needed to become a tenant. And they have to apply and we accept them or don't accept them on their business plan and such. But they come with us their recipe. We test it for the pH, and then we go from there. When they start, they pay a small fee to us, and they pay their Department of Health and Hospital permits. We get them started with that, and then we just kind of move on from there. We start with the recipe. We see if it's shelf-stable. If it's not, we work on natural preservatives or other preservatives. And we get it to be a shelf-stable product, and then we teach them how to process in that incubator.
Right.
We have the bottling equipment. We have a 100-gallon kettle. That's usually where they start. And we teach them first about sanitation and cleaning and that sort of thing, and then we teach them how to bottle or produce their product. We have products from all the way from gelato being made all the way down to hummus. And, of course, everybody has a barbecue sauce, right?
Right, no, absolutely.
If I see one more barbecue sauce, I think I'm just going to have to
pour it. Well, and unfortunately, and a hummus now, so.
That Creole seasoning and hot sauce. Those are the three no-nos.
That's right. Thank you.
And you can walk into a grocery store and show a buyer a hot sauce, and he's just going to tell you to turn around and go away.
Now you know, you mentioned just now a shelf-stable product like salad dressings or marinades or things like this. Do y'all do the whole scope of work from shelf-stable to refrigerated to frozen foods?
We do, and we also do analytical testing, and that's where we make a lot of our revenue, nutritional panels, shelf life studies, and testing the product as
right.
well. But they can freeze it, they can bottle it, they can sell refrigerated products from our incubator.
What's the first cause of failure, other than of course revenue to be able to produce it? What's the first issue when you look at the failure of products?
You know, we give them an entrepreneur test when they come in. So I think they don't, if they don't realize what it takes to run your own business, because it's a labor of love, right, John?
Sure, absolutely.
I mean, you do it for free for a while.
Right.
I mean, when you first start a business, you're going to work many hours. And if they don't put the hours in it, if they don't treat it like a job, an eight-hour job, that's when they usually, that's the largest failure rate as far as them starting a business. It may not be their thing. But they do try, and they come in, and we send them to the farmer's market the first thing, and they start, you know, marketing their product there at the farmer's market. We have a really good relationship with Whole Foods. We don't introduce them to buyers until we think they're ready, because it makes our program look bad.
Sure.
If we don't prepare them and demo. And the failure rate, though, I think it just comes with them not realizing what it takes to make their businesses grow. And marketing, much marketing is needed. And that's probably where they lack the business side of it and the marketing side.
Well, you can imagine at our USDA food facility in Donaldsonville, where we're producing foods for major companies all over the world, how many people walk through the front door every day? And, of course, we always ask them about, have you been to the Ag Center Food Incubator, or have you talked to anyone? because they, you know, to walk directly into a USDA food facility and say, I have this great product.
Exactly.
Yeah, you know, and we do have some, and of course we do business with people who haven't been your way first, which is always a mistake, because even though they may have the money, they may have a family with a lot of wealth who's willing to back them up, we always discourage them, because it's not about the product, as you say so well. It's not about being on the shelf. It's getting it off of the shelf. And without having that good business acumen and realizing what it takes, they're certain for failure. But you cannot, you can imagine how many people disregard that information. Well, I'm going to fund it myself. And I said, well, the best way to the best way to lose money is to fund it yourself. And why don't you just give me the money and go home? You know, let me go ahead. I'll invest it for you and come back in 2 years and I'll give you a check.
Exactly. You're right. Oh, my goodness.
But that's absolutely the truth.
And I'll tell you a story. I have a lady that spent $50,000 before she even got her product on the shelf. So I definitely discourage anyone trying it on their own without, you know, some guidance.
No, absolutely. Tell us about a couple of those big successes that y'all have had.
Well, we had a company called Wowee, and when they walked into my office with their Tupperware butter dish and sauce in it, I this will never work. But Wowee dipping sauce is now in 500 stores. They've only been in business for two or three years. They have their own manufacturing plant. They're one of our success stories, and honestly, you can't judge a book by their cover, because when they walked in with that butter dish, but they're very successful. And Louisiana Sisters is another company that's successful. You can see their products in most AG stores. They've grown probably 75% in the last 4 years, so they do very well. And a lot of our tenants go to retail locations. Like, we have Italian Stuffed Artichoke Company that went to a retail location.
Ryan.
They're still doing very well. Cupcakes, and then you've heard of Hanley's salad dressings, I'm sure.
Right, sure.
They only started a year and a half ago, and they're in 150 stores and distributed by AT.
Gabe, can you stay over? We're going to take us a quick little break.
Sure.
It'll just take us a minute. We'll come right back in a couple other questions for you.
Great.
I know that's one of the greatest. You're answering some of the greatest questions most people listening to the show is probably thinking about right now. How do I get my product to the shelf? Y'all will be back in just a minute.
Rain for miles around. All the old timers say it looks just like the Dust Bowl days. That's life in the old farm town. There's a big city man that holds a mortgage on the land. First of every month he comes around.
Hi, this is Cheryl Castillo. Join me each week on The Exchange for conversations with musicians, artists, dancers and writers, poets and actors, and everything else in between. Tuesdays at 1 p.m., Wednesdays at 3 a.m. here on listener-supported public radio for Acadiana, KRVS 88.7 FM, Lafayette, Lake Charles.
Hi, this is Bill Bowens from The Dirty Rice Show, inviting you to join either Mr. Lee Klein Peter or myself every Saturday night from 8:30 p.m. until 10 p.m. for Dirty Rice right here on KRVS 88.7 FM, Lafayette, Lake Charles, public radio for Acadiana.
Soy Fernando Pérez Viar. Únanse a mi programa Espacio Latino este domingo a las 5 p.m. para que escuche buena música latina e información sobre la cultura latina aquí en el sur de Luisiana.
That's Espacio Latino, coming up this Sunday evening at 5 here on KRVS.
You're listening to KRVS 88.7 FM, Lafayette, Lake Charles, online at krvs.org.
All right, everybody, welcome back to Stirring It Up, the best tasting show on radio, and we're so happy that you're joining us around the kitchen table today. We have a great guest, Gay Sandoz of the LSU Ag Center's wonderful incubator project. Gay, thanks so much for spending time with us today.
Thank you for having me, John. I'm a big fan of yours.
Well, I appreciate that.
Gay, before somebody comes to you, what are some of the things they ought to think about with their homemade product? Are there things that they need to do beforehand just to kind of test the water, so to speak?
Well, we do encourage them. You know, you have some people cooking out of their kitchen selling products. We do discourage that with them just because of safety issues. But when they come to us, we ask them to do a one-page business plan. And that's something they really should think about before they come to make a food product, you know, and price out all the ingredients and their packaging equipment. And we give them vendor lists so they can know who to go to. Mm-hmm. That's the main thing. You know, make sure you can have the best recipe in the world, but if it costs you $10 to make it and you can only sell it for $11, it's not a good thing to do. So we encourage that business part of it to be done.
Sure. And then you talked about some of the successes, some of the products that were a little challenging, but is there a niche that somebody's missing out there?
Well, you know, it's good to come up with something a little different, not too different where you're having to teach the person what it is. They have to know, you know, a little bit about it. Like, we have gelato, we have hummus. People know what that is and what it should taste like, so that helps when they come with something a little bit familiar. But you do have to be a little bit unique, so we try to encourage that. And they like the local, the homegrown, and, you know, it's very endearing to do a handcrafted product, so that's what we have mostly coming out of the food incubator. But we have 20 people there and 20 on a waiting list, so we're pretty busy.
Gabe, just quickly, I want to say, you know, what a great service y'all provide. And I know people can access you pretty easily just through LSU Ag Center Incubator. They can go to the website and they can certainly make a few phone calls to find out what it takes to get in. How do you get on the list, etc. I also want to encourage being in food manufacturing myself and starting out as everybody else did. There's no great success stories where, you know, just waiting to happen. You have to get out and make it happen. You have to go out. And just because you just mentioned the butter dish a minute ago, it's not always the obvious products that's going to make money as well. Most of the obvious products have been taken out there on the shelves. And I want to also offer to you, you know, as a USDA manufacturer and somebody who's been in business well over 20 years and producing food, for major companies as well as the entrepreneur. If I can ever be of any service to you, to come out to LSU and maybe speak to a group of young as in development entrepreneurs, to tell them a little bit about the whole process of food manufacturing and how you get it done, how you get it into the marketplace, distribution, to assist y'all maybe or tour the plant itself. I'm always happy to do that as well, because y'all offer a great service.
Thank you. And
we can tell people about the successes in the business. Because again, we started out in the beginning of the show. I told everybody we started out cooking in a restaurant, and then our great volume was moving to a 5-gallon kettle. And today we dump 10 tons every 45 minutes.
Wow.
So when you dump 10 tons every 45 minutes during a 15-hour day, we're moving a lot of food through our facility. And there's no reason why some of your young entrepreneurs shouldn't be part of those tons coming through there. We just want to help tell them how to do it. So thank you so much for the great work that y'all do out at LSU. We appreciate you spending time
with us today.
Okay.
Thank you. I'm going to take you up on that invitation as well.
No, absolutely. Well, we're in the same business, and I know that the skepticism that young entrepreneurs have, how am I going to get this done?
Exactly.
We can tell them how we got it done, and we were in the same shape they were in the first day they started. So we can
That's very inspiring, I can tell you. Thank you very much.
Happy to do it. All right, everybody, that's Gay Sandals, Ag Center Food Incubator, and we'll have all of their information on our website. Michelle, do you have any books on
Absolutely. You're shocked.
Well, I'm shocked that you have some food manufacturing.
When have I not had one?
Every week.
Every week. This was kind of a difficult subject. So, I mean, I was.
Well, the first book is entitled Cooking Up a Business: Lessons from Food Lovers Who Turn Their Passion into a Career, and How You Can Too. It was written by Rachel Hofstetter. Entertaining, informative, not a textbook style read. By exploring the trials and tribulations of actual people who turned their food hobby into a business, the reader kind of learns how it's done. The author offers some great suggestions on what to do, what not to do, how to get started. Must be passionate about your product, very much mirroring what Gay just said. Got to be determined and strong worth ethic like none other. You'll be introduced to entrepreneurs. Great book, great addition to your library shelves. And then the second book is called Handmade: How 8 Everyday People Became Artisan Food Entrepreneurs and Their Recipes for Success. It was written by Jennifer Lewis. It takes more than just a few good ingredients to start and build a successful artisan food business. So the author gives a background in entrepreneurship and marketing, which is essential, walks you through the maze of which marketing tools to use, how to deal with government regulations, how to work within a budget. So it's an inspirational read for anybody who has a dream of wanting to break into the market. And can't say getting away from the 9-to-5, because I think you're just walking into a 24/7 kind of operation. But it's your own business.
Sure, absolutely.
So both great additions for your library, especially for culinary entrepreneurs who are inspiring to be on the market shelves.
And Slama, what about our what about Facebook? What about the website?
Yeah, so we got this Facebook page we like to let our stovehounds know about. It's facebook.com/stirringitupradio, and that's where we continue this conversation online. You can come on by and like us and get constant feeds about what is happening. We always have photos that get posted there. We're posting, and our stovehounds are coming on by.
Now, there's two great photos I need to load up. Did you load up my turkey?
Oh, yeah, we're working on that.
You loading up my turkey?
Photo up there for your turkey. You got some good full-color photos?
Full-color. Are you kidding me? I had a whole film crew out there.
Oh, goodness.
Absolutely. I mean, it's really good.
It's an hour special.
It's an hour special on how to kill a turkey.
Jeez.
In only 4 years. And then, of course, Alex McLaren, you know, I want his photo on there with me. We took a nice picture, and, you know, he's my understudy.
Yeah, yeah.
And I'm his understudy. I'm actually his understudy. He's gonna be my wax figure.
Huh?
And I'm here to answer anything you want to ask me right now, Alex. I mean, here's the forum, the perfect forum, national radio here. Any question you want to stump me with?
What do you think I should talk about?
talk about me. It's always an interesting subject. Well, I tell you what I would talk about. I would talk about taking that step out into the unknown and making something happen. Just taking a chance and going out and making something happen. But, you know, everybody wants to know, just like you heard the lady talking about just now, everybody wants to know how do you make things happen? How do you become successful at things? Whether it's you on your boar hunt, you go one time. Perfect example. You went out. You stayed out till 1:30 last night. You shot and you didn't get him. You know, you hit him and you couldn't trail him. So what does that mean? A failure? No, that's one hunt under your belt. And now you have experience in the hunt. You have experience. Now you're going to go out next time. And you, who knows? You might be the greatest boar hunter ever living, right? But it all starts with that first step into the unknown, right?
Yes,
people are afraid of that a lot of times. And I want to tell you right now, do not be afraid of the unknown. You know, Michelle, there was a cook, and Alex, this is a good story for you. There was a cook at Giles Island Camp. She was new.
Oh, okay.
And she says, I'm really so intimidated because you're in my kitchen.
Oh.
And I said, don't be intimidated. I mean, I started cooking the same way you do, one pot at a time. And I said, what's your greatest fear? She said, well, I don't quite know. The ovens don't always work right. And I'm not never quite sure about how high to boil the pot. She said, you know, I'm a home cook. I cook round steak and I cook beans and I cook. She said, what would be your best advice to me as a new cook? Now that we've had a chance to, because I was with her for 2 days. I said, I'll tell you my greatest piece of advice for you. Don't be afraid of the pot. Make the pot afraid of you. I said, attack the pot. You're in control of it. That pot has no business making you afraid of it. You need to make the pot afraid of you. And she said, oh, my God.
I think that's one of the things you always tell the culinary students at Nichols is manage the pot. Manage the heat.
Manage the heat. Absolutely.
You're in control of it. If it starts to burn, move it off the fire.
So you see, Alex, what you just said, the anticipation of squeezing that trigger, because at that time you're thinking, am I going to hit it or not? Is it going to get away or not? All the doubt in your mind. So what other question? That was a good one, right? Oh, Michelle, you ask your question.
Well, no, I wanted to know, Alex said that he was, now that he's going into high school, he's choosing a kind of a...
Agriculture.
He's choosing agriculture. So tell us about that. What made you choose that? And tell us about your passion, obviously, to follow that track.
Well, a lot of my friends, they were all in agriculture. And so they always would talk about it and how much fun they had. And they would always try to get me to go. And I just decided to...
Thought you'd give it a shot.
Yep.
All right. Now, Alex can help me with my garden next year.
And believe me, she needs it.
I'm serious.
That would be the greatest project for you to help with.
If you got a project next year.
I'm not good either.
But after you take these classes, I bet you will be. You'll learn all the stuff I don't know.
Alex, let me tell you a quick story before I give a recipe out. And this will help you out. I got into the restaurant business by accident because I had never eaten in a restaurant, never went to a restaurant, because I grew up in the swamps of Louisiana. We had no restaurants. So when I left home to go to work, I had never eaten in a restaurant, never. And I was a grown-up almost by that time. And I was looking for a job, so every day I would stop in this place. It was a Howard Johnson's in those days. And I would stop to get a cup of coffee and read the paper, looking at the want ads. And every day the manager would say, found a job yet? And I said, no. And next day I'd stop again. She said, any luck? No. And a couple days later, after talking to her every day and having coffee, she said, you know what? She said, I think you'd be great in the restaurant business. And I said, oh, no, I don't know anything about a restaurant. She said, but you don't have to know anything about a restaurant. You don't have to know one thing about a restaurant. You have people skills. She said, you and I have been talking here. You've been telling me stories about, you know, you trying to find a job. And the way people love to hear stories. And she said, so you don't have to know anything about the restaurant business. You have an attribute that'd be good in the restaurant business. And I think you'd be very successful. And every day I stopped for about another couple of weeks. I didn't find a job. And one day she says, our manager is here from Houston, our regional manager, and I've been telling him we're looking for some trainees, and I've been telling him about you. Would you like to talk to him? And I said, well, not really. She said, well, let him come chat with you.
And about 3 days later, I was in the restaurant business, and that was 30 years ago. And I tell you what, Michelle, I mean, she might not agree with him, but we've done all right.
I think you've done all right. All right is a way to put it, I would say,
So you see, Alex, you never know. So you see, I wasn't in farming. I don't know much about agriculture, but you know what? You may end up being a great entrepreneur in farming. You see, you never know. It's all about your passion, right?
Yes, sir.
So, all right. With that, y'all, we're going to, if you want to see what Alex and I look like as two wax figures, all you have to do is go to our website. Anyway, y'all, talking about great recipes in food manufacturing. Oh, my God, I have so many great ones. I can't even think about it. And, Michelle, you know, we're talking about game rubs and all of that.
Mm-hmm.
One sauce that I made that went into food manufacturing only took me about 15 minutes, and it made about a cup. And it's one of our big products today. It's called Burr Creole. It's called Creole Butter. And the sauce is excellent over sauteed fish or grilled shrimp. And I start out with 8 ounces of unsalted butter chipped. And into that, I add 1/2 cup of white wine, 2 tablespoons of lemon juice, 2 thin lemon slices. Now, I want you to think what I'm doing here. In a saute pan, I'm going to combine the wine, the lemon juice, the lemon slices. I'm going to throw into that 1/4 cup of claw crab meat, diced tomatoes. I am, just hold on a minute. Tomatoes. I'm going to throw in garlic. I'm going to throw in about 1 clove, 2 cloves of garlic minced, and 1 tablespoon of green onions. Michelle, I'm going to add on top of that some peppercorns, about mm-hmm. 1 tablespoon of whole peppercorns, and a little bit basil and bay leaf. And I'm going to cook all of that in that white wine. Remember I said 1/2 cup of white wine? I'm going to simmer that until all of those flavors of the tomato, the crab meat, the peppercorns, bay leaves, basil, all reduce in that skillet. It's only going to take about 3 to 5 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm going to render all of those juices. And then at that point, I'm going to put my butter in. Remember, we had 8 ounces of unsalted butter?
Right,
I'm going to throw that on top of all of those flavors, and I'm going to melt it into the pan and let the butter simmer with all of those flavors. And then after a couple of minutes, I'm going to just pour it through a strainer, throw all of the ingredients out. Now the butter is infused with all of those great flavors, right?
Okay.
That's where the Creole comes from.
Mm-hmm.
And then I pour it into a cup, and I let it, once it's all the ingredients out, and I let it harden again. And once it hardens, then I kind of wrap it up into a little tube. I press it into a little, like, sausage shape,
mm-hmm.
and I put it in the refrigerator. Then whenever I need to cook something, I just take a little slice of it and throw it
Yum.
In, and all of the garlic and the tomatoes and the green onions. You with me?
Ooh.
Sounds delicious, actually.
Yeah, I've sold a couple tons of that. You know what I mean? Anyway, y'all, it's been great to have Alex McLaren with us today. And I tell you what, I love your mom, Kristen McLaren, who brought you over here. She's working with us and heading our foundation, and you ought to thank you, Mom, every day. She's a great girl, Michelle Yard, equally good. Michelle is kind of like my mom. She watches me every single day, and I fight her just like you do. You do your mom every day, you know. And, of course, Lama, thank you so much for being with us as well.
Yeah.
We're out of here, y'all. Hey, you know what to do? If you have a good product, go see the LSU Ag Center. If you want to talk about it first, give me a call. I'm happy to talk to you. If I can't, I'll put Michelle on the phone with you. Alex, thanks for being here with us, okay?
Well, thank you for having me.
Hey, you keep being a good young man. You're going to grow up into, well, follow my track, not Slama's over there. Y'all, we'll see you next week.
In Ghana in the early 1970s, funk music came home to Africa, fusing with high life to create a whole new genre.
One, two, three,
hello, I'm Josh Colline, and join me for Ebo Taylor and the Pioneers of Afrofunk in Ghana. Next time on Afropop Worldwide from PRI, Public Radio International.
Sunday night at 8 on KRVS.
Everyone, this is Pat Mitchell-Worley, and coming up next time on Bill Street Caravan, we go to the Stax Museum of American Soul Music for the Stax to the Max Festival. We'll hear from Mad Lads, the Temprees, and the great William Bell. That's all coming up next time on Bill Street Caravan.
Tonight at 11 on KRVS.
featuring music of the Harp Family Relatives, the Malian Kora, and the Middle Eastern and Indian Santur this week on Harpistry. Sunday at midnight and Monday at noon on KRVS.
This is KRVS, 88.7 FM, Lafayette, Lake Charles.
Rendez-vous de Cajun en direct du Théâtre Liberté à Eunice est rendu possible par le Best Stop au Scott. Rendez-vous de Cajun live from the Liberty Theater in Eunice is made possible by the Best Stop Supermarket in Scott.
You're listening to KRVS 88.7 FM, Lafayette, Lake Charles. Cultural Service of the University of Louisiana at Lafayette. Ready to send you to Eunice, Louisiana at the Liberty Theater for Rendezvous des Cajuns.